Welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. This is your breakdown edition as we break down North Dakota State beating Missouri State 27-3 on the road. And joining me is my co-host, as always, Ross Uglum. Ross, how are you this evening?
I'm good. Fun football weekend. One of my best friends in the whole world got married on Saturday. We had a fantastic time. No one... especially not me, was checking the game cast of the NDSU game during the exchange of vows. I mean, that definitely didn't happen. Well, it was good times had by all. NDSU got another win, and I'm doing real well.
All right, so before we get down into Coach Klieman's press conference from Monday, some recruiting time, an interview, and then the Missouri State rundown, Ross, I will give you the floor here to start the podcast out with. Why don't you give a few words about Mr. Paul Morlock?
Yeah, I'm sure everyone that has downloaded this and is listening to it by this time knows that Bison do it all back. Chase Morlock's father passed away. He was battling cancer. I know that the community had a big fundraiser for him early on in 2016, and he finally did lose that battle, and it was just a tough time. And I know if you go back and look at Coach Klieman's press conference, he had such a difficult time getting that one going. And of course, you know, then we the media had a difficult time transitioning the conversation back to football. Klieman made a point of just reminding everybody that this is just a game, that family comes first, and that there is a human element to this. It's not all about wins and losses. And then I personally would just like to thank Chase. He was, if you go back and listen to last week's podcast, he was so friendly and engaging and willing to talk football. And cancer is not a disease that sneaks up on you. There was obviously a lot of stuff going on, you know, behind the scenes with him. And I just appreciate him, you know, having the chance to talk to us and giving us his time in what was obviously such a difficult time, and that Ryan and I's thoughts and prayers are certainly with he and his family.
Absolutely. You know, prayers out as Ross said. So let's transition to that press conference on Monday, Ross. Outside of obviously some tough talk there, what can you tell us about what Coach Klieman had to say about the football side of things?
Yeah, on the football side of things, the Bison came out of the game relatively healthy. I don't think that any, I guess you'd call it, new injuries were suffered that'll have a long-term effect. I know that Garrett Malmstrom was unavailable. Of course, Chase Morlock was unavailable, but that left the tight end position very thin. Brock Robbins is a guy that I don't see back for quite a few weeks, maybe even a month here. Eric Perkins, with his thumb situation, is still a ways off as well. They did use safety Eric Bachmeyer on special teams for the first time in a while. As we mentioned, both in the feature and in the interview, you know, Morlock was on every special teams unit, so they were thin up and down on specials, and Bachmeyer was kind of sprinkled in there. He should be closer to full go against South Dakota State. Now, whether they stick with him in the nickel or just go with what has been working, I guess, with Dom Davis and the Jaylens in nickel, that'll be something certainly to watch as South Dakota State loves to throw the ball. That'll be something that we look forward to, I guess. And then one sort of administrative thing, NDSU's Director of Football Operations and Equipment Manager, Brian Gordon, this was his last day. He's off to a co-commissioner or an associate commissioner position with the CAA, which is another FCS football league. So best of luck to him and all his future endeavors. And then the other bit of news, I guess, and I'll kind of transition us then into the Pro Bison update, is that Billy Turner, who was actually asked to play left tackle, and it didn't go super well for him, and Andrew Bonnet were both released from their respective teams. Now, Bonnet was released off the practice squad, never made the full 53 with the Eagles, but I'd anticipate both of these players catching on probably this week. Certainly Turner, He's a former third-round pick not too long ago. I just don't think he was a great fit with Adam Gase and what they were trying to do with Ryan Tannehill. I think he's a guy that you're going to want to just stick at left guard and leave him alone. But a player with enough talent, I think that someone's going to want to take a shot on him for sure.
Yeah, so let's transition, as you said, to the Pro Bison update. Starting off and taking the lead would obviously have to be Carson Wentz, and he actually threw an interception, and he lost his first game on the weekend. So what can you give us in this Pro Bison update?
Yeah, that was a wild one. Got down early in Detroit against a Lions team that up until that game certainly didn't seem like it was very good. The Eagles, along with your beloved Minnesota Vikings, seemed to sort of be the class of the NFC going into the weekend, but dropping one to Detroit, not a great look for Philly. Wentz's end-of-game stat line looked fine. I think he was up around 290 yards passing, decent completion percentage, decent yards per attempt, and two touchdowns, but he unfortunately did throw his first career interception, and that one kind of ended the game. It was a deep kind of a shot there. His team was down one, I believe, and it ended up going into double coverage and getting picked off, maybe kind of a rookie mistake there. Other than that, Emmanuel Hag and Marcus Williams, Kyle Emmanuel, Joe Hag, and Marcus Williams all earned starts for their respective teams. As I mentioned, so did Billy Turner, but it didn't seem like an appropriate thing to bring up on account of him already being released based on that start. And then this upcoming week, we probably won't talk a lot of Pro Bison with as much as we're going to have to talk about South Dakota State. So, Bison fans, be ready for some primetime Pro Bison. Kyle Emmanuel is going to be on Thursday Night Football. Joe Hag and the Colts are going to be on Sunday Night Football. And you can catch Marcus Williams and the Jets on Monday Night Football. So those of you without NFL Sunday ticket that are stuck watching the Vikings and whatever game CBS throws on, you're going to be able to see a bunch of ex-Bison on primetime TV. So that's exciting. Ryan?
Yeah, heaven forbid fans are forced to, actually, with the Vikings on a bye week, considering they are the best team in the NFC over your Green Bay Packers, and they're probably going to have a plethora of options on Sunday now, aren't they?
I haven't looked at the TV schedule, but I'm sure that that the noon games are going to be plentiful, although I'm not honestly sure how many Bison are left after you get through those three guys that are going in prime time, and the local markets here in Fargo have actually been kind of negotiating their way into having the Eagles be the other game that's shown opposite Minnesota. So it's been good for Carson Wentz fans, but there are other pros too. And I think sometimes because Carson's a quarterback and because there was such a circus around his pre-draft process, people forget how many other pros are former Bison in the league, and they're going to be showcased certainly here in what I believe is week six. Let's dive into recruiting time with Ryan Burns. I think it might be a little shorter segment this week, but at least there's something.
Yeah, at least we got something to talk about with obviously a big home game coming up this weekend for South Dakota State. From the sources I've talked with here, it doesn't sound like there's going to be any official visitors on campus. But that being said, from what I've heard, I'm guessing somewhere upwards of 20-plus unofficial visitors, so kids from all around the state of Minnesota. I'm guessing a majority of the current NDSU commits will be there. It's going to be interesting to see what guys I find that are uncommitted with offers making it up there. I haven't been able to confirm any as of yet, but there is one new offer to talk about that Coach Kleiman extended on Monday night, and that is to a Kansas defensive back named Eric Scott. What you need to know about Eric Scott is he absolutely looks the part of a major college football player, as he's a legitimate 6'2", 200 pounds, and they want him at corner. I had a guy down there go watch one of his games in the last couple of weeks, and from his scouting report, he tells me he's got fantastic vision on the offensive side of the ball, and athletically, he is one of the most gifted players in the state of Kansas, and for the life of him, he cannot figure out why Kansas has not offered him yet. On defense, he plays safety, and he plays on offense, he plays wide receiver. And obviously the Bison want him at corner, so it may be a little bit of a transition, but the guy was just, again, dumbfounded that Kansas hasn't offered him just because of how athletically gifted he is. He runs extremely well. He jumps extremely well, and he's 6'2", 200 pounds, and you're not going to find a guy like that too often. He's got a majority of the Missouri Valley already offering him, and with this offer, that does change things. I've started to text with him here tonight, and I can tell you he is very excited about this North Dakota State offer, and I will have a full story up with him tomorrow. But outside of that, Ross, NDSU is trying to get Malik Lofton and Deion Campbell up on visits. I was able to go watch them play last Friday. I can tell you that their high school absolutely underutilizes these two players more than I've seen any other school underutilize their most talented players in years. When Deion does have a chance to get the ball in his hands, which is only a few times, he was able to break off some long runs, and he's extremely explosive in space, and the Malik has a lot of length. And just don't ask him to do too much with his hands, as he was having some issues with drops last Friday night, but he is very athletically gifted as well. So, Ross, I think that sets us up here for one of the interviews you were able to get here in the last couple of days.
Yeah, this is an interview with new NDSU nickelback Dominic Davis. He's a redshirt freshman.
So did you feel like this last Saturday against Missouri State was the best performance by the pass defense so far this season?
Yes, I would think so. You know, they try to establish it because they know the week before we coaches always get up on us about, you know, our pass defense need to be better, and every week we're going to be challenged during the pass D because they know that that's where we're struggling. They know that they can't run a ball, so first thing they're going to try to do is get the ball in the air. So I think we did a pretty good job overall stopping the run and stopping the pass.
Do you feel like the success that the run defense has is putting stress on the pass defense because other teams just know they can't run it?
I would think so, but at the same time, coaches, you know, stress every week that our pass defense has to get better every weekend. I think with the success that we had last week, it's a big step towards what we want to do every game and even every day at practice of getting better at pass D. So teams just, they don't know where to go with the ball. They want to run it or even pass it.
What do you think that you guys struggled with as a pass defense early in the season? What wasn't quite cleaned up?
Attacking the ball was the biggest thing. You just let the ball hang in the air, and if you're going against good receivers, they're going to go up and go get it, and we just sit there and let the ball come down and try to jump at last minute where they see the ball coming the whole entire time, so they kind of know where it is, and our time was really bad, and we're starting to clean that up at practice and get more challenges on the ball during practice every day.
There's quite a lineage now of Bison defensive backs. How often do you talk to CJ or Champ, or even Marcus is still doing his thing in New York? How often do you kind of bounce ideas off those guys or talk to corners that used to play here?
Well, Coach Shep talks to those the former players a lot, and he usually bounces a lot of ideas off of them and bring them back to us and tell us, you know, CJ uses this method and how it works here and there. And then he talks to Mark Will and say, you know, those things, some of these things work and some of these things doesn't, but he wants us to try it out to see how it is or how it works with different people, because everything doesn't work the same with every person.
Sure. Now, you started playing football in high school a little bit later than most guys. Is that right?
Yes.
So are they trying to be more specific with you positionally for the Bison, or are you learning kind of one spot, and how's that learning curve going?
Well, right now they're going to stick me at the nickel spot and try to get me to learn that very well this year, and then going on to next year, you know, depends on how I play this year. You never know what's going to happen next year, but this year they want to focus on just nickel and one thing only.
Okay. What challenges does a guy like Winicky present that maybe you didn't see with Cooper Kupp or even Vanderbilt from Iowa?
I would say his height and his ball skills are a lot better than anybody we've seen so far, and that you always want to, they always key that we need a double team on him, but I feel like we have the corners and the safeties to, you know, go one-on-one on him.
How about the tight end? What have you seen from him?
He's a big guy. I mean, he can go up and get it, and that's where our ball skills come in handy, where we have to just go up and get the ball before he can, or get some direct disruption on him just so he can't get off the ball and just stop it from getting up in the air. So the direction that we get off of him, hopefully be able to get him off his route, and maybe they will just eliminate him overall, but he don't even get a chance to get the ball.
So the defensive line, obviously a group that has been together for a while, the linebackers, all three guys came back. I know Nick's down, but the secondary by far the newest group. What has it been like kind of trying to mesh as those other position groups are groups of guys that have been together for a while?
Well, it takes a little bit. Our communication is slowly getting where it's supposed to be. With so many new people everywhere, the communication was kind of slack in the first few weeks, but as the weeks go on, we're trying to pick the communication up. That's the biggest key, is just picking up communication, you know, talking to each other and knowing exactly what your assignment is.
How important has it been to have Robbie and Trey back there, guys that played a full season together almost last year?
That's great. I mean, those two back there, they are actually the communicators in the back five when we go nickel, and they make sure everybody's doing their job. Or if you feel like you don't know what you're doing, you can always check with your safety. Check with those two because they know exactly what they're doing, and they'll put you right on where you're supposed to go.
What's Coach Klanderman doing for you guys on a day-to-day basis?
As far as practice?
Just his impact on you as a player and your position group.
Making sure that we're the best DBs that we could possibly be. He stressed every day in meetings that, you know, we could be the best DB group in the country, and I believe him. Like, we just have to attack the ball. We got to be more physical. We got to do everything. The small things is what hold us back, and if we do those things, I believe we can be the best DB group in the country.
You know Coach Kleiman's a defensive backs coach at heart. Can he stay away from you guys at practice, or does he have a hard time with that?
You know, he's always kind of close to us or whatever. He watches the defenses a lot, so when the DBs, you know, mess up or something, he's always right there to fix it or kind of know what we're doing or what we're supposed to do, because he was a DB coach for a couple of years, so he stayed close.
Last thing, what do you guys need to do to be successful on Saturday against South Dakota State?
Play physical, fast, know your assignments, and tackle.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Yep.
Of course, we'd like to thank Dom for his time and giving us the chance to talk with him about his position with the team and of course, the upcoming game against South Dakota State. Before we get to that later on in the week, Ryan, let's break down what went on in Springfield, Missouri.
Absolutely. I know we talked about in the preview edition last week, Ross, but I was expecting an improved Missouri State team. Obviously, their record this season has shown that, but this game was actually, I mean, a pretty slow start for both teams, but it was close, and I think that, obviously, NDSU has a large amount of respect for Missouri State, and it's just, this is a team that I think is going to be much improved year after year after year, but what are your thoughts?
Well, it certainly seems, especially when you look at the standings this year, that outside of North Dakota State, the league is constantly in flux. It looks like Northern Iowa isn't any good. South Dakota State seems to have jumped them, and then of course, you know, they've also jumped Illinois State. Those, you know, UNI and ISU being such thorns in NDSU's side over the last couple of seasons. But, I mean, I would watch out for Missouri State. This was, a game in which North Dakota State was unable to score in the first quarter and I think was only up 13-3 deep into the second half. I think even at one point in the fourth quarter before that Aaron Steidel fumble recovery and glorious 20-yard return. This was a competitive contest. So yeah, the respect that Coach Kleiman has for Coach Steckel of Missouri State is certainly warranted. I was very, very impressed.
Speaking of being extremely impressed, Ross, I think you obviously have to be very impressed with the pass defense for North Dakota State. They limited this Missouri State offense to 146 yards through the air. Only a long of 18, and then two interceptions. I want to know, is this you've seen this pass defense play all season?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that Missouri State was definitely trying to do was test the perimeter, both in the jet sweep game and the pop pass game. They didn't go downfield a ton, certainly not with the frequency that South Dakota State will, or even the frequency that Eastern Washington did. But any time that you're able to, you know, hold a team to 146 yards passing when they drop back 35 times, that's an impressive feat. And I really think it was the pass defense's finest performance of the season. And honestly, a season that hasn't been full of great pass defense performances. I mean, this is a very young secondary. You heard us talk about that, or you heard Dom and I talk about that just a little bit in the interview. And I think that getting a kid that threw for 297 yards the week before against an Indiana State team that seems to be another one of those improved Valley teams, or at least a team that's risen up out of the basement of the conference, was an impressive day for the D-backs.
Speaking of an impressive day, I was impressed with the way that North Dakota State moved around Greg Menard. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was playing some positions and doing some things that I haven't really seen him do this season, if yet in his career. I mean, what did you think about the way that they used Greg Menard on Saturday?
Yeah, I asked Kleiman specifically about that at the press conference. And, you know, I asked him, was this a reaction to the way that opposing teams have been game planning for him? He said, yeah, absolutely. They've been sliding to him. They've been chipping him. These are, of course, all things that you'd already know if you read my game film reviews. But he basically confirmed that that's what was going on. And another thing that I made brief mention of was the potential that this is a part of the training for Greg for the next level. I think it's pretty obvious that a player of his size is not going to play on the defensive line at the NFL level. And if they can move him around and drop him into coverage and do things that confuse opposing offenses while at the same time showcasing talents that he has, putting things on film that NFL evaluators are going to appreciate, I think it's a win-win for everybody. I think the obvious priority is helping the Bison win on Saturdays, but these defensive coaches aren't stupid. In fact, the head of the program isn't stupid. He understands that getting guys prepared for the NFL is not only good for the student athletes, but pro Bison are good for the program.
They are good for the program, and I know that we usually, in terms of the running back position, Ross, usually talk about a lot more of Lance Dunn and Bruce Anderson, and I think a name that we've been neglecting over the last few podcasts is King Frazier. Again, a guy that's not going to, you know, from you and I anyways, get a lot of talk, but I think that needs to change here this week.
Yeah, I mean, it's because Lance and Bruce are so fast, and because Chase can do so many things that King gets to be the forgotten guy, despite unquestionably being the starting tailback and receiving, you know, the lion's share of the carries, and it's because he's slow. I mean, Division I running back, King is a slower guy, but he is more physical than most backs that you're going to see. The way that he finishes runs is so impressive, especially in the red area. He's been a touchdown magnet since the day he got to North Dakota State. And I always, you know, refer to these Bison games as boxing matches. And the first and second quarter are these body blows, the A-gap powers, the outside Gs, the read options. You get a player like King Frazier in there who's attacking the players that are trying to tackle him. And these are guys that are having to deal with Big Zach Johnson and Austin Kuhnert and Jack Plankers and these mammoth NDSU offensive linemen. They're already getting beat up on by the guys blocking them. They don't really need to get basically mashed in the face by King Frazier. And when you see these close games or these closer games that North Dakota State plays that get peeled wide open in the late third quarter and fourth quarters, it's because of King Frazier and the offensive line. And I think it's probably time that King Frazier gets a little bit more credit, at least from us, for his part in all that.
I know a guy that gets his fair amount of credit, and that would be a young man by the name of Bruce Anderson, who, oh, by the way, on the day only had 8 carries, but you know what he did with him, Ross? He turned that into 90 yards. Your man, Bruce Anderson, take the floor.
Yeah, I keep saying. I mean, obviously a injury concern earlier in the year, a guy that is a very important part of the special teams. He's a bullet on kickoff coverage, and then, of course, will come in and do the kick returns. That was, I think, probably where he made his biggest impact a season ago. But I maintain, 25 carries a game for Bruce Anderson, and he's first team all conference. I really do believe that he has that level of talent. But I think it's a better situation for North Dakota State to let King, you know, blast away at the opposition, to let Lance do what Lance does, because he is, I think, also probably an all-conference level athlete that just kind of happens when you're recruiting against the same, you know, you're recruiting largely against your own conference and pretty much getting your pick of the litter, and then everybody else gets to kind of do what they do. The Bison are getting the top-level athletes in the MBFC, and specifically I think they're getting them at the running back position because of how successful running backs are at North Dakota State and how often they're called upon. So, yeah, it'd be great if Bruce got 25 carries a game and 6 targets in the passing game. And I think he'd be a very effective player doing that. But right now, that's not the best way for North Dakota State to win games. And so we'll just appreciate the flashes of brilliance that he provides.
So let's switch over to the passing game side of things and talk a little R.J. Urzendowski. Easton Stick only completed 11 passes on the day. Only threw the ball 20 times as NDSU wanted to attack things on the ground. But 4 receptions, 73 yards. He actually brings down his average yards per catch down in this game, which is absurd, but RJ is he is one of a kind, isn't he?
No question about it. Incredible, really, to have a 4-for-73 type of game bring down your receiving average. I thought I was really impressed with, of course, his highlight catch. It was on the top 10 FCS plays of the week. I don't think it quite made SportsCenter. It wasn't exactly Zach Vrah level, but Easton Stick, naked bootleg left, showed a lot of courage, I think, planting his feet and firing that one down the field, knowing damn well he was going to get hit right underneath the chin strap, and threw it up to his Creighton Prep boy, R.J. Urzendowski there, who went up and kind of tipped it to himself one-handed and was able to come down with that, and then hit him with a little bit of hot sauce, a little shake and bake to pick up about 7-8 yards after the catch, but super impressive body control. And just a guy that catches everything and continues to catch everything. And that's, I think, part of the reason why NDSU is targeting him so much deeper down the field than in years past, because he just doesn't lose jump ball situations. And he's not 6'3 like Jake Winicky. He's not 6'5. He just has a ability to control his body and high point the football that the defensive backs that he's facing just don't have.
And speaking of these North Dakota State wide receivers, Ross, I think that I'm not a huge backpack guy, but you called it. I mean, Darius Shepherd, 4 receptions, 62 yards, and a touchdown. Again, I don't really like to be that guy, but when you deserve it, here you go. Take it away.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mentioned that I thought that one of the MVPs of this game was going to be Darius Shepherd because he was called upon to do so many different things in this game, and you know, he certainly didn't disappoint. This was one of the few games that Shep was not given a rushing attempt, but he was the primary return man at least in the punt game, and then also was able to get loose in the passing game and scored on an absolutely beautiful corner route with some just spectacular ball placement by R.J. Urzendowski, but his impact on the game was unquestionable, and he also probably should have had about a 15 or 16-yard reception in the red zone. He ran a beautiful comeback route against the outside corner there, and Easton missed him just a little bit high. But, you know, you talk about this with a lot of NDSU offensive contributors, and Shep really, I think, is another guy that if he got the focus like a Jake Winicky or a Cooper Kupp, I think he could really be a special player. If this was a guy that was getting 12, 13, 14 targets a game, I think would be up there certainly with the leaders in the conference, if not the country. But balance offensively and defensively is a staple of North Dakota State football, and I don't see that going anywhere anytime soon.
So let's switch to the defensive side of the ball. Again, for an outstanding performance, I figure we should probably talk about them a little bit, and it has to start with Matt Plank. Nate Tangway, 12 total tackles and 5.5 tackles for loss between the two of them. I'd say that they had just about an okay day. How about you?
Yeah, both players were very, very impressive. Plank was a guy that split a lot of his snaps the week prior with Dom Davis, who is the nickelback that comes in for him in the sub package. This was a game where NDSU felt a lot more comfortable staying in their base 4-3, and Plank was very, very impressive. As he mentioned in a post-game interview, he is a run defense specialist, and I truly don't believe that the run defense takes any hit at all, really, going from DeLuca to Plank. Plank's not in Nick's league as a pass defender, and that's probably why Nick is such a highly thought of a pro prospect. But in the run game, in that 4-3 scheme that NDSU likes to run to contain opposing rush offenses, Plank is such a weapon. And Nate Tangway finally starting to fill that stat sheet. I've been telling the people, I mean, since the beginning of the season, that Tangway was an underrated player, that he was an All-American level athlete, and he is basically unblockable. From his position, it's very difficult to accrue statistics. From his position, it's very difficult to get national acclaim, but he is one of the best five or six defensive players in the Missouri Valley Conference. That is not an exaggeration. Just go back if you get a chance. They put these games on YouTube. I know a lot of Bison fans DVR the game. Just fast forward until you get to NDSU's defensive snaps and then watch 99 on every play. And you'll be blown away at what these centers and guards have to try to do to contain Tangway and how much it screws up what they're trying to do as far as the offensive line concerned and how clean it keeps Plank and the rest of the linebackers, because those guards and centers don't have time or the ability to get up to the second level and make blocks.
I know that we usually do talk about this every week, and I swear every week we say we're not going to talk about it, but I think we have to. Jackson Koontz had a 48-yard punt, and I don't want to sound the alarms, but whoa. Jackson Koontz putting the ball over 45 yards. He had three punts in the day for a 42 average. Ross, I'm starting to get a little bit excited. How are you feeling?
Yeah, it's definitely become a weekly segment here, the Jackson Koontz update. But I wanted to be fair to the kid, to be honest with you. We've been very hard on him, and he's still not allowing returns. So if he can improve that average from, you know, the 35-36 yard range to the 42-43 yard range and never have a punt returned against him, Coach Kleiman's going to be fine with that. I'm going to be fine with that too. If you, no matter where you are on the field, to be honest with you, even if they're backed up, if you can guarantee me 43-yard punt and zero return, I'm going to take it. And I thought he was very impressive. He pinned one inside the 20. And let's give a little shout-out to the backup punter, Easton Stick, with his coffin corner punt to the 11- or 12-yard line. That was an impressive little quick kick there.
Absolutely. So I think that's about to wrap things up for this edition. But, Ross, you want to give folks a preview of what's going to be coming on Thursday?
Yeah, I was able to talk to actually all three primary cornerbacks. You heard our interview with nickelback Dom Davis today, and then you'll hear both Jalen's on the preview show for South Dakota State. Dom just happened to have the longest interview, so we used that one today as the singular one, and we'll use the other two on Thursday. But I will also publish a feature. I think Ryan's going to have the Know Your Enemy feature come up tomorrow. I'll probably drop the feature on the cornerbacks on Thursday, and then somewhere between Friday afternoon and Saturday morning, you'll get your South Dakota State preview from yours truly. So that's what's coming up, both on the Bison Report radio podcast and on the BisonReport.com website.
So it sounds like a fantastic time to subscribe to the Bison Report is what you're telling me, Ross. And for the folks who are, again, on the fence, it's a bunch of content coming your way. It's only $5 or $4.95 a month. It's a fantastic value for some of the best North Dakota State coverage you are going to find. So if you want to follow Ross on Twitter, at Ross Uglum, you can follow the NDSU on Scout account there as well for all your NDSU news. And if you guys can rate and review the podcast, again, that goes a long way in helping other Bison fans find this Bison content, which is, I would like to think anyway, Ross, a pretty good podcast anyway. So again, that's going to wrap things up for this breakdown edition of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. And for myself, for Ross, we thank you guys for listening, and go Bison.